Welcome to the Art from Debris podcast.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Brad. We're friends, but more accurately, we are family.
We've been doing ministry together now for over 20 years.
We're grateful you are listening, but know that we are practitioners, not experts.
We're not trying to offend, but we're also not holding back.
And we are unashamedly Christocentric.
And we know we're broken.
But in all things, we continue to learn. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Art from Debris podcast. Glad y'all can join us for another conversation. All right, a little bit of house cleaning. If you have not subscribed, what you waiting for? Go ahead and do that. All right, the house is clean. This conversation that me and Jeremy have, man, it's about race, the word race, or the definition of race, just using race in our language, in our thinking. Should we still be doing that? Does it have a place in God's future? Is it helping us towards the future? You know, there's a lot of questions that come up in that. As I study Afrofuturism a little bit, as I've talked to several of the people that talk, pastors, lay people, missionaries, scholars who are thinking about a way forward when it comes to this race thing. There's a lot of opinions out there. Well, here comes me and Jeremy's opinion.
You know, one thing I was interested in exploring, but I don't know how long we would go on this, is I was thinking about the connection between new heaven, new earth, kind of the eschaton, the eschatology of all peoples, like ethnoses, nations, you know, and racial categories as a social construct.
Ooh.
Like, and basically, like, how long should we use those? Like, should we use those as Christians, as like resurrectionist Christians looking towards new heaven, new earth? Is it a contextual thing where we use them? Because those are those categories in the way they've been used, are that's a recent phenomenon in human history. Ethnoses, nation groups, tribes. That's a much more common kind of categorization, you know, is kind of racialized language actually you know, like the devil can't invent, he could only imitate and corrupt, you know? So I'm like, is it just like a corrupted version of ethnoses? Like the Lord is making nations and he claims them for himself, you know, through Israel and through Messiah.
Yeah.
But along comes this other thing that's kind of like nations, but not really, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems has only created division, hatred, you know, like it's only been leveraged for that, at least. You know, I think people try to redeem it, like claim, you know, whatever in the 60s Black Power movement, like Black identity in the American context. But outside the American context, you know, you go to certain places in the world and it's like they still don't use the racialized categorizations. They're like, it's still tribes, it's still nation groups, it's still people groups, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it's a different thing. And you know, anyways, I was just like, is there a time where we just say as like new heaven, new earth people, we just go, yeah, we just can't use that language anymore? Or is it like, no, as missionaries in these contexts, we use them, but we understand that they are not ideal or limited? Or is it like, it's just language. It means something different. It is good to use. We should use it. You know what I'm saying? I was just like thinking about those type of things. Like, you know, is there some kind of like accidental harm or accidental agreement with Satan actually by using and cooperating with these terms, terminology, instead of using the biblical constructs, because it doesn't wholly map, you know, it like overlaps, but it doesn't really map completely with the biblical language for people, for humans and in categories of humans. So I'm like, I don't know, but anyways, that's close to all my thoughts on it.
Wow.
I don't really know, you know, but I was just like, is this helpful? Like, is this, or is it accidentally hurtful, or is it neutral? It could be neutral. It could be like, yeah, it kind of doesn't matter, like, because we're in America, it's just an intellectual exercise, and so you could pontificate for 5 minutes, but then you better call black people, you know, in America, black folks, you know, like, don't like, hey, what, you know, and then what do you do with displaced people, for example, in America? You know, it's like, yeah, what tribe do I hail from? I don't know. Do you know why? Slavery. So like, don't take this away from me too. You know, this has become like a new tribe, but anyways, yeah. but even like, sometimes you'll even say it, like, it's like, you know, black folks, when you say, well, Caribbean, and then there's like Northern, Northwest, Northeast, like even regionalized black culture, you know, mm-hmm. and really different.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like naming that, saying, well, then at some point, and then even like, you know, when just calling out white people, but it's like, white people are like really, really diverse, you know, and it just, depending on what kicking angle people want to take, mm-hmm. they just lump everybody in, and it's a racialized term. And it's like, but that, okay, that's sort of true, but that's not completely true. It's, so is that like not helpful, or is it like, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, it'd be good to localize like where the problem is. So
yeah, race, is there, well, I'm not even asking, is there a problem? You know,
well,
is
you know,
there a problem with it? So
if we talking about race, so people, let's just be clear, people have been categorized by ethnicity for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the world
by
works.
Language, by ethnicity, language, and ethnicity, then by tribe, by family,
yeah.
name.
And, yep. And you know, they'll share a language, a culture. There are people, and then peoples mm-hmm. will go to war with each other, right? So
yep.
That exists for a long time. Throughout, and some could argue throughout the existence of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in our Bible,
mm-hmm.
we see it. Some people would say Babel. Yeah, some people would say the Tower of Babel is the start of every nation. I would argue that as soon as Cain got banished, he became a different people.
Yes. Yes.
And so, you know, this existed forever. But race became more of a thing in America. So it sharpened the racial,
yeah,
like race construct.
Because early on, the white folks were slaves and black folks were slaves.
White folks and black folk. And then
they had to delineate.
Through time, like, they had to delineate. So through a number of occurrences and things that were happening, and not just like one full sweep of law going
That's
through,
right.
but like different laws coming out in order to keep slaves in line, to make sure slaves,
keep them in line, and then retain them
and retain
generationally.
Yeah.
Yep.
These laws kept coming out, and eventually it became a black and a white thing. Black folk.
Yes.
Eventually were.
And even in the law, it became almost immediately difficult to identify who counts as white, because it was like, for a while, the Irish were not white. Like for a while, Italians were not white. We're going to create this category so that we could basically continue to oppress these people that
it was to uphold white supremacy. Like,
yes,
that is
explicitly.
that is the birthplace of white supremacy, is these laws that came out in mm-hmm. order to say who was white, and why they're white, and what rights they had. Because if you're white, you had rights. If you weren't, you didn't. You had the rights of a slave.
And so anybody who could, well, first of all, it was a small minority of people who really counted as white.
Yeah. And then people kept tracing this. Yeah, people kept tracing their lineage
said,
back.
I'm in too.
What qualified as white.
Yes.
Then people start mixing. And so you had mixed folk, and then it became what percentage of white, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was a, so my point is that in the roots is you have this construct that gets formed, and from its inception, it's formed with with wrong intentions, with bad intentions.
Yep.
But
it wasn't a sociological study
on
like movements of people.
Now,
how people move around in the earth.
Yeah. So so in order to say like it's neutral, it's hard to say it's neutral. Race is neutral because it started off with bad intent.
Yes.
But in theory, if you're looking at it as a social construct, technically, if I'm studying it, it's neutral. If I say there are black folk, white folk, Asian folk, which is a racial construct, right? Because Asian is not a thing in Asia, right?
Billions of people.
Only in the US. So, and
in
all the
in
different...
China, they're like, I'm Asian. It's like,
No,
they don't think themselves as Asian.
It's thank you, United States, the greatest nation in the world. But but in theory, it is a neutral construct, right? It's a neutral phenomenon. It's to categorize people based on some commonality. So, right, it's like, black folk have a common heritage in Africa. A lot of us share the heritage of slavery when we're talking about black folk from the Caribbean
in America,
in America, but we're different from folk who are like African national who have no slavery history in their lineage. It's like there is a, so it is to say by skin color, you're saying, there are darker skinned people. Now, the thing is, so we can say, we could theorize that, you can look at race and say it's a neutral thing, but the values that have been put on it, the laws that have come with it, the ways in which people are treated unfairly, the sentiments
the way it's been
now,
leveraged.
Yeah, the way it's been leveraged and how it's in the DNA of our country. It's hard to say it's neutral. So it's like as a thought exercise, you can say, it can be neutral, but in reality it's not. So that's why I'm wondering, like, where's the problem? Is it race? Is race the problem? So can we just change the language or start using different words, but it's still, so is using that the using race as a category of the problem, or is it not? And if it's, is the problem a people, like an actual people? And if it's, if it's not the problem, if race is not the problem, or excuse me, if changing the late, if we're talking about the actual problem, the question is it the language? Is it the people and the history in it? Is changing the way we think about it, if we stop using racial language, what are we changing to? Are we changing to ethnicity language? And what are we calling the mass incarceration of a certain type of people who look a certain way, whether they're
African national,
no matter the type of black
the history.
They are looked at a certain way and approached a certain way. I think for me, the question is, what are we going after? Like, what are we really going after when we say, like, should we not use race? Because this has come up, and there's some really, I think if you study Afrocentric, Afrofuturism. If you study Afrofuturism, there are some thinkers who, that's how they think. It's like, okay, let's get away from the oppressive language and constructs, and let's build our own. Let's build out worlds where we where that is not even a thing.
And that makes sense. And at some point, you go instinctually. I go, there's a bunch of stuff that the Nazis used to say about Jewish people to categorize Jewish people and categorize themselves and delineate between people groups. All of that is illegal. Like, you're literally not allowed to say any of that crap anymore. And yet this stuff has like similar origins, similar usage, a longer history of it, you know, but then even people who are against the evil leverage of racialized language still use it. It's still like accepted in the language, in the dialogue, you know, quite a bit actually. So yeah, one of the questions I have as far as like, should we not, what the problem is, there is a bit of like that theological piece. Like, I don't know where to put it theologically.
So yeah, that's, you know, I think that's the one of the main questions to ask. So it's like narrowing it down and saying theologically, where should we land and why? I think that's a great question that helps us maybe narrow the scope of this question.
Because there may be a way to like use it in the world, act in the world, but that's a missionary type thing versus like, yeah, but we don't really operate with that. We need to operate with a construct that's like biblical. And then from that biblical construct, we interact with the world. That may include racialized language, but it's possible that no, as Jesus people, we don't really accept the oppressor language. We don't own it. We try not to think through that lens. We think through a different lens, but you know, we also understand if we interact with the world, we may have to use it so that we are understandable, you know? So it's like people can understand what we're talking about.
I think that's a good way to look at it, is because as a missionary, you need to know the problem. You need to be educated. You need to understand what's happening, but you also need to be building something other. Like, you're building the kingdom of God. And so it's like, what does the kingdom of God look like? Mm-hmm. And so you can know race, but you can use ethnicity. You can know how the statistics, what the statistics are, certain injustices, and how race plays a factor. Mm-hmm. And you can you can respond to that using your kingdom language and your kingdom tactics, if you want to say that. And when you build something, you're making sure it's more kingdom and that you're asking different questions. So, you know, we can dream. And if I really like fast forward through some of our theological talk, and I just get into the weeds a bit about somebody who creates a business, maybe there's like, I'm going to create a just bank that gives out loans justly, you know, maybe instead of a race category, which has legal implications, right? But they do the work of creating some kind of system, form, application, where maybe in the back end, they can filter down people's responses to the race categories that may be needed for like tax purposes or something. But but on the front end, when they're asking people and how they think about giving out loans, they make sure that category does not exist. But at the same time, make sure they understand what people's ethnicity and income, and they try to get a holistic idea of who the person is, so as not to inadvertently, because they're talking with people who are in a system that can you know, no matter what, even if race is not explicitly said, they're in a system that will most likely take someone, whether it be like because of their name and the sense and what how people respond to a name that they see, or how people respond to a certain income or address where they know, you know, you got all these things where it can,
of course,
but they create some kind of thing that allows people to respond justly to each applicant. And not repeat, you know, and so they, you know, maybe they put ethnicity and explain like they're really looking for like actual ethnicity, but then, you know, that comes with a number of other markers that they also have to think about yeah. justly, in their mode of operation. So, you know, let's get into the weeds a bit, but I am wondering if somebody's like, you know, trying to be missional with their work, that they would try to think through these things creative, right? I'm not, I can't be creative for a banker, but I'm, you know, I'm not, that's not my field, but I am thinking.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm thinking that, yeah, when you start to free yourself of the oppressive language, the language that comes with a certain culture around it in history, when you try to free yourself from that, and not just free yourself, but create something that goes against it, that is trying to right the wrongs
yeah.
of that language. Mm-hmm. I think it opens you up to build more beautiful things, things that are more kingdom. So it, you know, is that doing that and parsing it out is worth the journey.
The work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about something that just came to mind is racialized language basically a cognitive distortion? So cognitive distortions are things that, like, it's something that we're thinking, it's something that's in our minds, but it's distorted. So one of the cognitive distortions, like mind reading, like I just know what's in your mind, like the way you responded to me in text, and I know what's your, and I'm reading your mind, and it's distortion because it's like, it may be true, but it may not be true. And most oftentimes it's not true, right? It's like, it's a distortion. But you believe it to be true because there's some slight little bit of evidence. Or remember that one time 3 years ago, Brad, you kind of snapped at me a little bit. And then this text today. And then I'm like, yeah, see, Brad hates me. You know, I know it. I know he thinks this about me. You know, this little beady eyed, bald headed white dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just a mind reading thing. And it's the distortion. It's wrong. You know, yeah. But I could find evidence for it, but it's a distortion. But one of them that is often employed when people are like finding themselves in conflict and anxiety is overgeneralization. And it, and then oftentimes when we're having conversation about racialized concepts, we're almost always nuancing it. We're always almost always saying, you know, in this context, in this way, in this people group. Even Black America is not just Black America. That's an overgeneralization. Black America is extremely diverse. Regionalized Black America, you know. So even that seems like, man, that's, you know, what is Black, right? And I know that's a big question within the Black community. Am I Black enough? You know, type of stuff. And you know, am I Black enough? I know a lot of dudes were like, don't like basketball. They're not good at basketball. And they're like, am I Black enough? And it's like, well, that's an overgeneralization. You know, like it gets into stereotypes. So
yeah,
it is actually racialized language. And the same thing would be for like white people, you know, white people always like this, whatever. So, well, not always like that, you know, but so, or not every white person is like that, or, you know, but there are trends, similarities, or something like that, but it's still like an overgeneralization. You see what I'm saying? So is actually some of the problem is it's just not accurate. It's just not nuanced enough, and it leads us into believing things that aren't necessarily corresponding with reality at a higher degree. And even when we talk, we're pushing down into the nuance already.
Yeah,
but is it actually clumsy? Or it's not as fluid because we're still using the oppressive language. Like that's our starting point is the oppressive language, which is itself an overgeneralization for the purpose of oppression. And so that's just one of my thoughts too. Like, because if you do use overgeneralization, so I'm just saying, is that true? So just thinking about it, if that's true, that racialized categories are actually an overgeneralization for the purpose of whatever. So the purpose is a problem. But overgeneralization, when you study like family systems theory or like cognitive distortions, always produce anxiety. Like it produces anxiety in people. So I'm like, wait, we're trying to see the healing of the nations, like as Christians. And I'm like, using overgeneralizations doesn't produce healing. It actually pushes us towards anxiety. you know, is that like an accidental impact that we're having? So it's like you're running, but you decide to carry a giant backpack full of weights. Like, we're going to carry this language with us as we try to run against the tide of oppression, you know? Oh man, this is like not helpful. So anyway, so that's bringing in like family systems theory. Like, does that actually help us understand kind of what's happening? Or is that just like, that's not really what's happening. That's a different discussion for a different day, different idea, you know, but. Yeah. Huh. So I'm interested. Is it overgeneralization? It seems to me like it is, but then according to family systems theory, overgeneralizations actually lead you towards anxiety. You know,
got it.
Like, that's not what we want. So anyways.
And if I'm understanding right, when you say family system, it's kind of like, if I had to use family as an example, you know, if my mom or dad just was kind of like, yeah, my boys are bad. It's like, wait, but
yeah,
I'm the boy who gets good grades and I've been in trouble like them. And it's like,
or boys are always bad, or boys are
they
just so sexual, they can't control themselves or something. Like, these are overgeneralizations. Yeah. It's like,
so here's what I think. I'm wondering if, there's a time and place for generalizations.
Okay.
When you're searching for broad commonalities.
America.
Yeah, there you go. You're searching for broad commonalities.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, how should Black people cut their hair? Treat their hair? For most of Black folk, we share common hair care needs.
Mm-hmm.
For most.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, so for instance, I was with my barber and he was just like, you know, if you want to help your dry scalp, you need to use products with water in it. He said, Black people tend to need products that's going to moisturize and add water to their, you know, skin. And that's the thing. Where they don't produce as much oil.
Yeah, yeah. Like physiologically.
Whereas white people tend to like oil greasy. It up. So they need something that's not going to add so much moisture, if you want to put it that way. And so I was like, oh, that's good to know. Like, and he was like, when you look at a product, a hair product, shampoo, conditioner, oil, or anything that you plan to put in your hair, just check to see if the first ingredient is water, right? That's a broad generalization for Black, but it's relevant, right? So, and there are some cases where, you need broad generalizations for certain things. Black folk got Black skin, darker skin, usually.
Yeah.
That means something when more melanin. That means something when we in the sun.
Yep. Vitamin D, hard to get.
Yeah. You got it. You got it. So, but you know, not all Black people, but statistically for Black people. Right. So, it's helpful to know, like, okay, what does it mean if I'm darker skin or lighter skin, or maybe I'm Black and I'm, and forgive me, I don't know if this is politically correct, but you know, if I have an albino, type skin pigmentation,
pigment.
How do I respond to that? Right. So, do we certain ways in which, like, it's not going to fit everybody, but it's broad enough generalization where it's like, oh, this is helpful to know, right?
Yep.
So, but that doesn't work everywhere. So it's like you need to be wise enough to understand, like, I love it when we use it when it's helpful, right?
Yeah, it's like, but physiologically, it feels like that's probably the at least the most accurate or something. But then we get into character, we get into intelligence, we get
then
into
you start then it,
that
then
type
it
of stuff.
Gets,
it's like, that's not, you know, motivations. Yeah. It's like all of a sudden, like,
it's
man,
unhelpful.
I don't know.
It's unhelpful.
Yeah. I don't know if this
it's
is helpful.
It's very and we've seen that in ministry where it's like we can say black for so long. But at some point, your language has to upgrade and your tactics for reaching people has to upgrade because black is so diverse.
Yep.
So
and like you said,
you can't
Asian,
generalize.
Same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And so you gotta upgrade. And part of the upgrade has to at least be the acknowledgement that you're generalizing and it's insufficient. Like that there is more to it. And you need to have reason for why you're, so I can say, so common language for me, so someone who's worked in black specific ministry for a while, common language for me is to say, yeah, black folk. And part of the reason I say that is because there are certain things when we're talking about it, it's generalized for all of us, how we are received in the world, and the potential. Not necessarily everybody's experience, but the potential injustices that we may experience or we have experienced or folk around us has experienced is blackness. You're experiencing being black in America. But I can say that when I'm for specific things and ways in which I'm trying to minister or to bring out certain realities that are affecting black people in general. So I could say things like just injustice, let's say like criminal, how we treat it criminally. Now, knowing I can say that knowing like this is the reality for a lot of black people. And there's gonna be some things when we're pulled over and before we even said a word, how we're gonna be treated as a black person, how people you know, put us in a certain scenario with a non-black person, and I'm not just saying white, I'm saying non-black person, how we're looked at, our general, the kind of the historical characters in media and what we have been, that's that's reflected on black people. But once I start to go deeper, right, if I'm in it, especially as a missionary, I can say that, but then I have to, like, when I'm coming up with solutions and saying how we should respond, I have to acknowledge that, oh, but there are some of you who come from a place where you didn't see a lot of black folk. And that's okay. There's some of you who have uncles and cousins who was in jail and you come from a place where it was in your face. And we're here for you. There's some of you who don't even know what this means because your parents came from the Caribbean or from Africa or from anywhere else and got to a place where they, you didn't have to, they protected you from it. So that's just not part of your story. And that's okay. And some of you come from a place where you actually saw healthy policing. Praise God.
Yeah.
Praise God for that. And that's also part of the story. And we need to figure out how all those stories come into into play to help us be what we need to be as black folk with each other and in God's global church. You know, so that, you know, that in that way, it's like you have to come off the racial language in order to, especially if you're trying to create kingdom solutions.
You have to move beyond the overgeneralization, or if you continue with the generalization, it becomes overgeneralization. So you would say there's some moments where it's like, this is broad enough, this is common enough. If you had the bell curve, you're like, I'm catching 80%
description.
You know, so it's just statistically like, if it's 80%, black folks experience this, you know, it's a generalization. But if you want to move towards specificity, nuance, if you want to start actually addressing the injustice, then you're probably going to have to nuance that out a little bit more. Otherwise, it will be because overgeneralization, like you brought up the police, is like, our interactions with the, you know, black folks' interaction with the police typically is like this. Okay, that might get, you know, either they know it or their friend, like really just like one degree of separation. every black person I've ever talked to has had negative experiences with the police. But let's say if they don't, it's one degree away. It's like a brother, an aunt, a cousin, a friend had a really negative experience, you know, and a racialized negative experience. A lot of people have negative experiences with the police, but we're talking about a clearly racialized negative experience. You know, if you're robbing somebody and you have a negative experience with the cops, that's on you. You know,
that don't count.
We ain't talking about that.
We ain't talking about that.
you may get, you know, your face put in the ground. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's one degree. So, but to continue to say, all police are evil. All police oppress black people. You could talk about a generalized reality, a generalized experience, but if you're going to start addressing, you know, police brutality, but also just misinformed policing, which are actually two different things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to get into that, then it has to be more nuanced. Not all police are evil. Not all police are oppressive. Not all police are shooting unarmed black men. You know, if you continue to say that, then that would be the overgeneralization, which then leads to the anxiety, societal anxiety, not just individualistic anxiety, but actually society. Kind of carries its own mental state. So that's interesting.
And that's the easy way to go. That's why generalizations live most prevalently. Find a home, nutrition, good air to breathe. Like generalizations find paradise in social media and widespread media, because that's the easy way to go. People tend to want easy cognitive categories. They don't want to do that work. They're going to go towards the easy thing. So just say black folk, like black people, like that. I just say white people, just say they want that. And when you're on the side of like, you know, for me, it's like, I see all the injustices that involve the police. And it's very easy for me to just say police. Like there's something wrong with police. All police.
Something wrong with the police. Yeah.
Bad, and you know it has its history in just being those who tried to catch slaves, and you know it started off. It has a history in a horrible history and how it started.
Yep.
And the history is just living. Like I can generalize and just be like, I'm just pressing it, but then I gotta acknowledge, like, no, one of my best friends was police in college, and we're talking about this is a guy who helps rescue traffic women. It's a guy who was white, a guy who had a disability. And was in a wheelchair. Shout out to my boy who, shout out to Will. But you know, and so I know this as the police. He's the one who, when Black Lives Matter said, Brad, let me tell you about something that you probably don't know about all that's happening. First time I heard somebody talk about how when talking about Rice, when he, the little boy got shot, talked about like, bro, those are two rookie cops, and that should never happen. A rookie should always be with a veteran. And so solution is not necessarily like tear down the police. Part of that solution is the better training. And who, you know, who, when all that stuff was going down, he had a seat of influence in policy and training and used that, had conversations with me about it, because he was like, oh, I know my part. I need to help. I need to help change.
He's like, I'm a Jesus person and I know a bunch of black people.
Yeah. But if I stick to my generalizations, I'm like, bro, you part of the problem. Don't need to talk to you.
Yep. Yep.
F the police.
And it breaks fellowship with a brother who actually can maybe do something.
Yeah. And granted, I'm not saying don't protest. Like,
oh yeah.
Cause I'm actually at the place where it's like, let's use our full brains, right? And we can both protest a broad thing that we want change, and then we can also work with people to produce that change. And and for me, I'm like, the police can do the same. They can say yes and amen. I'll protest with you, and then I'm gonna go and try to be better. Now that's hard. That's very hard, especially when you got people responding in various ways, throwing insults, saying we just want to rip it apart. But I'm like, the kingdom people, that I feel like that's the kingdom space, which is always a hard space to be in. The kingdom space is, I'm gonna say yes and amen to the thing that is just and right, and I'm gonna work towards that thing, even in the messy complexities, right? Even as I have to fight away like the general pieces, like I'm gonna go and I'm gonna be a peacemaker, which we know is an act of violence. Like acting in peace is a violence against evil. And so
also you get violence done to you.
I'm trying to make it sound good.
It's great. It's great.
I mean, I'm trying to make it sound good. That's what King did. He said, you know, non-violence is violence. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yeah, man, like, let me, but you know, we also get hosed and bitten by dogs and bricks thrown at us. And so it is we're not talking about a easier road. We are talking about the godly road.
Yeah, yeah. So the generalizations that are true, not a problem. Seems like as missionaries, we have to engage in that. We have to, that's going to make us understandable in the wider world.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like we should not necessarily... We need to be careful to not get swept up into it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to be thinking in oppressive constructs. It's better to think as people. So I was thinking, I was like, man, you know, when in generalization, when white folks, when the people of the lighter hue, begin crossing culture, and I would assume this might be the same for any largely dominant and powerful culture. So like if you went to a different country and it wasn't racialized, but it was like there was a dominance, a dominant culture, when they start, you know, because that would be normal culture, you know, when they start crossing culture, a common mistake for especially white dudes, they begin to overgeneralize. They'll talk, you know, back in the day, it was like, you start trying to pull out anything that you heard in NWA say. It's like you try to repeat it to any black person that you saw, you know, just assuming that they enjoyed hip hop, rap, gangster rap, basketball. You're just overgeneralizing, and you're actually not seeing the individual. You're not seeing the person in front of you. You're just seeing the social construct called black or blackness, you know.
Mm.
You could even assume like they've had a negative experience with the police, which may not actually be true for that person, you know?
So
it's like you're crossing culture, but you're crossing culture not towards an actual people that's nuanced. You're just crossing culture to an overgeneralization called blackness. And that usually does not build relationship. I haven't ever seen that. You know, now if the people receiving it, you know, like I know this has happened to you. So it's like when you're kind, when you're like, okay, I'm going to love you. You're saying a lot of ignorant things to me right now. I'm not really a person in front of you.
Oh Lord.
I'm just a, you know, faceless, nameless black man in front of you right now. That's all I am to you.
Yeah,
I'm a token.
Seen that, bro.
So you often have responded like, I'm going to respond with kindness to, you know, to help this person not be stupid anymore. Right.
Yeah.
But it can still be hurtful. It's like I haven't seen that interaction really deep in relationship, because it seems like what you're doing is crossing culture into an overgeneralization rather than. So it seems like as a missionary, you could start with like, hey, there are some general truths. There's general experiences, general physiological traits.
Man. That's good.
But if we're really going to enter in, we have to enter into the nuance of the people, which is different, regionally different, families are different, educationally is different. Like they're an individual. They're a unique human loved by Jesus. If we enter into that nuance, that seems to build relationship, even though there's still maybe some stumbling along the way and ignorance along the way. but it seems mm-hmm. like I want to actually know you, your yes. experience. I'm not projecting onto you, you know, whatever I'm thinking, whatever distortion I have, I'm not projecting that onto you, even though maybe a lot of that distortion might be true. They may have been hurt by the police. They may have had some kind of upper, they may like gangster rap. Who knows? You know, like that all might be true also, but yeah. I'm interested in knowing them and the nuanced truth of that person. As a missionary, that seems to go a lot better, you know, than, yeah. than staying in the
yeah.
overgeneralization. All Black people are like this. This is what they all like. They all like basketball. They'll whatever had these type of experiences, you know, that type of stuff. I know some Black women that have said, like, you know, people just assume they have children out of wedlock, and they have to like make sure that they have to say that explicitly to people when they're meeting them, you know, like mm-hmm. they're married, you know, and it's like it all those kids are from the one man. You know, and they have to say that, because what gets projected on them, the overgeneralization that gets projected on them is, you know, you're going to have all kinds of baby daddies and that really bothering them. Like the person, when they're meeting people, the people don't really meet them. They meet the stereotype of, or the overgeneralization of whatever they think Black women are, which, you know, anyways, so that seems like a missionary. It seems like that's really important to as you actually meet with people, then actually meet with the nuanced people, not the mm-hmm. overgeneralization, you know?
Yeah, no, that's good. I think that's why I value displacement first rather than like educating yourself about the people from outside. Right. So,
Well, say more about that. Like, what do you mean by displacement?
So displacement meaning putting yourself with the people that you're trying to reach.
With the people.
So yeah. If that's kids, is like, you can go as a missionary, you can go and say, oh, I want to reach kids in urban, but more, let's put it more correctly, I want to reach kids in lower income areas. Mm-hmm. You go look mm-hmm. up statistics, right? Because you got, you know, you want to build a case, you want to get some people supporting mm-hmm. you want to mm-hmm. get some people that's going to go with you. You can that's mm-hmm. a common missionary tactic, like figure out what the problems
best practices
are.
Best yeah, practices yeah consult with a few people yep.
figure
yep.
out what the problems are. And so some, you know, one way to do that is you go and look up the statistics. You can go look up mm-hmm. the crime rate at a place. You can go look up how many people own their homes. You can go look up what the school grades are. You can go look up the demographics. And now you're starting to make these groupings in your mind that gonna in it, even if it's inadvertent, you're gonna inadvertently connect that to other groups of people or things that you've seen. You know, so my thing is, you could go that route, but maybe one of the first things you should do before you look up any statistics is just go to a Black church service. Or not, I said Black, but a church service in the neighborhood. Displace mm-hmm. yourself. Mm-hmm. Go see mm-hmm. the people. Start shopping mm-hmm. at mm-hmm. the local grocery store.
Yeah, my Winn-Dixie's.
But go in the place. And actually see it, meet the people, know them. Let your experience, your actual experience, do the work where your actual experience leads your thinking about the place and people, rather than mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. what's going to naturally happen, rather than the stereotypes that you already been exposed to, or even the statistics that you look up that say this is what this place must be. Because why a place is like it is, or why a reality is, usually there's multiple factors, and it's not just the people or the stereotypes yeah. that we put on the people. It's usually yeah. a lot of other things playing a part. So it's just good missionary practice to like displace yourself, be in the place, mm-hmm. let that inform how you think. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. we've seen it, man. We know people who do ministry among the poor. Some of the people that's doing it the best, that's doing it right, it's because they know people on the street. They actually, mm-hmm. the streets are their family. They're not just you know, they don't have some of the questions that people have, like, shit, how, you know, they don't have to ask the question of how much money should I give this person who's asking for something, or is it right that I'm giving them money? It's like they know the answer to that because the people that they give money to are more like closer to family than not, or at least closer to citizens, right? They feel like they are more like a citizen in that world rather than an outsider. And so, it can't be said enough. Displace yourself, let the place and the people inform you more than the trends and statistics that are going to tend to be more overly generalized already or trending towards generalizations. Because, you know, generalizations, you know, that's what marketers use and people who are trying to like use people. And that's not what we're about as missionaries. So that's what I mean by displacement. I'm saying let that place speak and try to speak more than the general, the generalizations. That's all I was saying, the generalizations that are out there about them, or that you might cognitively tend to start, you know, just naturally lean towards in order to, you know, diffuse your cognitive dissonance that comes with the actual diversity that you're going to experience. But you know, we know that you also know, like, and you know, there's stories about how miraculous the brain is. You can actually create new categories in your mind. You can actually create new avenues of thinking that become normal, that doesn't cause the cognitive dissonance. I think when y'all went to the Philippines for 9 months, you and a group of people in order to like understand what it means to be a church for the poor, that's one way. It's like, yeah, y'all pressed yourself into a place for 9 months. Yeah. And then that became, there's new norms that form and new ways of thinking that form. And so it's like, we both know, like, no, it can be done. And it needs to be done. It needs to be done. That's why I smile when I see organizations, because not me trying to be prideful, but the organization I work for, InterVarsity, has come a long way when it comes to diversity. And I smile whenever I'm with somebody in higher level leadership in another organization, and they want to do diversity work. They want to be more Black folk reached, more whether it be employees in their organization or for some folk that do campus ministry. They want to see that. They want to reach more students of color. And I laugh because I'm just like, there's so much to it. There's, you know, you can create a strategy based on, which is going to be based on generalities unless you're there in it.
You're going to need more than gospel music.
More than that, man. Much more. Much more. And
but if you just enter in to the generalization, then you will say, that's the solution. This is what we need. And you're like, oh, you're not actually seeing the people. You're seeing the stereotype. You're seeing the generalization. A lot of Black folks do love gospel music. That potentially could be a piece of the way to love and include. But if you boil it down to that, you know, these like really simple things, then you're not seeing the people. You're just not. You're seeing something else. You're seeing something that the oppressors have actually defined. And I guess ultimately, like, I don't want to participate in something that, you know, the oppressive history is the main influence of. I'm not as interested in that.
We got to be in the business of building something better, doing it different. Man.
Well, so we should use it, but use it wisely with intent to move towards the people. The actual people.
And what I see is when you choose to do that, because ministry, you have people coming in and out of organizations and communities all the time at varying levels of understanding. So there are people that come in and out who just understand generalizations,
That's
and
right.
they need to grow. But what I've seen is, as you do this, especially as an organization, as a church, your collective maturity goes up. Your collective IQ goes up. You look more kingdom. And then when people come in, you don't find yourself having to slow down or get stunted. It's like they realize, oh, this is the standard I need to figure out. Like, I need to work towards that because this is the family I'm in, you know. And so your family's maturity goes up, and your ability to create kingdom things that ask the right questions and respond the right way to people. And you start to circumvent and be a solution to some of those things that come with generalizations, the misses that come with generalizations. You start to at least be better than that. And you start to mature. It's beautiful, man, when that happens. It's beautiful. You know, I call back all the time to when I was a student and you were a staff for our chapter. And I saw, like, it took us like 5 years. God bless. God bless your grace. God bless his grace. And, you know, I was still in college after 5 years, but that's another story. But I remember starting golf, and our chapter was 75% white, and we were trying to be more diverse. And then that other 25% was some Latino, some Black. By the time I graduated, that chapter had changed to being 15% white, and then that 75% was Black, Latino, and Asian. And so, and you know, this is a campus ministry, students who have a significant turnover over years, right? So you have a student for 4 years. If you're like me, if the student is like me, you got them for 5 or 6, but there's turnover all the time. And yet I saw that chapter continue to mature year over year. And even as generations who held like the mantle of like good diversity and work in that work that went past generalizations, even as those generations graduated, people were still, you know, they had set the expectation, they had left a legacy there, and the chapter just continued to mature. And so, you know, I've seen it happen where it's like, what happens when you come out of generalizations? It was that outreach we did where it was like there were things happening that I think most of the students didn't realize was happening. When we did the multi-ethnic outreach, and in the middle, you know, as you know, we're having a party where people bring their information about their countries, right? That was ethnic specific. People brought stuff about their countries. They had a flag, they had a little write up about the prayer request for their country, and then also the beautiful things about their country. And then they brought some food and things like that. And you know, we had a program and a party, and at the end of it, people started taking pictures. I don't think people understood what it meant when folk came in the middle with both a Jamaican flag and a Haitian flag. And then also African-American people are in that picture, and like everybody's taking that picture together. I mean, I knew what it meant. And I know some of the folk knew what it meant because they knew some of the history and the conflict, the
tensions
and the tensions between, especially in that time, which was like the early 2000s, like Haitian Jamaicans and African-Americans and
not failing each other
and being together like that. Was something significant that raised the collective maturity of our that student group. So yeah, I think when we escape, or at least realize like generalizations is a season, not something that should be permanent. When we realize that, when we go to something different, it can raise the maturity. It can do all kinds of kinds of good kingdom implications.
That's a really good point. So the generalizations of racialized language allow us to enter in. It's like, it's not even the front door. It's like the front gate of something. Mm. But as we go deeper, the work of maturity happens in the nuance, the work of maturity, because that's actually getting closer to the kingdom. Like we're talking about the book of Revelation language, tribe, yeah, tongue, yeah, nation, come ethnos, on, you know,
go ahead and preach that.
So, so if we're going to move, if we're going to be drawn by God's grace into his future, then we're going to be, he's going to move us, and maturity is going to look like not the erasing. And I do want to say this, like, I don't think downplaying or moving away from racialized language is a like, oh, now we need to just pretend like it doesn't exist, or pretend like racial dynamics don't exist, or even pretend like ethnicities don't exist. Like, no, we're seeing this at the end of the Bible. So that's very important, because with Romans, you go, okay, we're getting grafted on the tree of Israel. Is that the erasure of ethnoses, nations, right? Mm-hmm. And then Paul talks about, like, no Jew, no Greek. Okay, is this the erasing of this stuff? You know, but then we see in Revelation, it's like, no, it's not the erasing. The nations still exist. The nations are going to be healed by the tree, you know, that spans the river of life, right? So it, we see him wiping tears from every eye. Mm-hmm. We're seeing everybody coming together and worshiping the land that the lamb that was slain. So that's just really captivating to me. So yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
You know, there's an entrance because it's a missionary thing. It's a contextualized thing. You know, 1,000 years ago, we would not use this language. That would not be our entrance into mission. Right. but it is today. But if we want to go deeper, if we want to mature, then it's going to be drawn towards the eschatology, the, you know, and it's going to move us towards the nuance and every tribe, every nation, seeing people for what they are, every language being there, worshiping the lamb that was slain. So I think it's a good point to point out the maturity in that. And that's even a great example. There's maturity even within the racialized groups. You know what I'm saying? Within the racialized groups. It's not just like, well, white people need to learn a bunch, you know. It's like, no, within the different categories,
these
overgeneralized categories, there's depth of maturity to happen even within those categories. So the only way you get there is the nuance, is saying we have to at some point drop the racialized language, and we have to move towards every tribe, every nation, every tongue kind of language construct that allows us to look at the lamb. And I would think the last mistake that maybe even that can happen is the overfixation on every tribe, language, and tongue, because the every tribe, language, tongue, they are looking at the lamb, you know, their eyes are fixed on Jesus, the author, perfecter of our faith. Right. So, you know, anything that we are focused on, even injustice, we're focused on an injustice. But if our eyes are fixed on this injustice, then we're losing sight of the lamb, you know, that was slain. And he really is our fixation. And because he's our fixation, we find ourselves working against injustice. Like it's a byproduct. We care for the poor because he cares for the poor, right? Not because we care for the poor, you know, but if we make it our agenda to care for the poor, then we are going to lose our way at some point. Same thing if we make it our agenda to, you know everybody's ethnicity or whatever, and be all about ethnicity. You know, I just think, man, no, we care about because he cares about. We care about because he's making a people that are not a people his people, and so therefore we care about the peoples. So I think what it's going to look like in the world will look similar. You'll be like, oh, it looks like you're really focused on multi-ethnicity or something, you know? Well, yes, we are, but it's almost an indirect route. It's like through Jesus, though, through Christ, we focus on every tribe, tongue, and nation. Like that's why we focus on those things, but it's through him. And if it's the other way around, then we're going to lose Jesus at some point. It may take 5 years or 10 years, but you know, we will drift if our eyes are fixated on something else. But anyways, all that to say, I'm not saying colorblind. I'm not saying there's not work to be done that's specific and concrete, but it seems to matter through whom that work is focused.
Yes.
Anyways, yeah, man.
No, that's good, man. Jesus is the one who can sustain us, and Jesus is the one who can allow us to do that work. Whereas, because it's both how we receive people and how we also perceive ourselves.
Yes.
So it's like I need to know, like, I'm Black, and I need to know how that's going to affect me when I'm out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also need to know who my ancestors are, what my history is, and I'm Black. I'm African American.
Yeah,
that means something. And Jesus is the one who can. Jesus is the one who knows.
Through Christ,
why is that?
What is African American?
Yeah,
and that seems really important.
And what it means in eternity, and not just my life, but in eternity.
Right. Eternity. Yep.
And so, that's significant, man. And yeah, I have to believe the Holy Spirit is the one who has been holding us, like holding me and my people. Now, here's the kicker. That's I feel like a lot of Black folk have found that. They found the God and Holy Spirit and the link between that's brought them, that's both to their homeland and all that that is good before slavery, but also in and through the atrocities of what our people have had to go into and continue to kind of fight and then the hope for us. Like it's all God and God's goodness in our people. There are Black folk who recognize that. My thing is, man, the white people understand, like, that's available to you too, to understand who you've been and the faith heritage. Now, unfortunately, your faith heritage includes some pretty egregious stuff here in this context. But then what God is making you to be, your heritage, your people, right? And what his future hopes are for you and your people, like that work to both understand, like, yeah, there's this generalization of my people as a white person, but then there's also this redemption that God would still want to use
the redemption
you and
the
to
nuance.
Do things through you. And it's like, man, that's a beautiful thing. And that's part of your identity. And to understand like the details of that, to understand like, okay, then what is my, you know, what heritage do I carry within me? What ethnicity do I carry within me? What is the thing that heaven sees in me? Like who are the people that have come before me and that heaven sees going after me? How does that inform me?
What is going to make it to heaven?
Yeah.
What's going to make it the new heaven, new earth, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so, it's a really interesting question. Me and my people, what's going to make it to heaven and earth? Because not everything does.
No,
some stuff's going to get burned up, a lot of stuff, but some stuff won't. And there's some kind of partnership with God in that thing, because He put it in us, and that's why I know both of us really value multi-ethnicity, because we actually want to see the full face of Christ Jesus, but we believe the Imago Dei, we believe the image of God is implanted, you know, in its full beauty and variety in different peoples and different tribes. And so we need each other to see the fullness of who Jesus is, but our pursuit ultimately is Him. And to find maturity in Him, we really do need each other and the nuance, the differences of each other to really see that more clearly, you know? But it is a good self-reflection. It's like, no, there's something in me, my people, my history, even language. Because something about language, that's a categorization of people, but there's something about languages that survive into the eschaton, into the end times. And so it's like, that's really interesting. There's something about languages that is a contribution to the glory of God. You know, and that's just a whole reflection on that. Like, but aren't languages just total human constructs? But I think there's a partnership between human and Yahweh. And languages are a part of that, that are a redeemable part of that. So I think it's a great, great reflection on that, man.
Well, that's
good, man. I'm gonna think about this more, man. This was good.
No, this is helpful. that was unexpected goodness. It's good to think about that. And I do think it has implications for the future of the church and future of Christian missionary work. Thank you for listening to the Art from Debris podcast. Y'all, if you have any comments, input, if you've learned something about this conversation about race that's been helpful to you, I want to hear from you. You can find me at Brad_Everett on Instagram. Hey, shoot me a message about what you're thinking about. All right. Hopefully, as we share with each other, we can learn together and push this thing called God's kingdom forward. All right. Until next time, y'all, keep making art from debris.